This time of year always makes me rethink what's in my closet. I'm trying to keep fewer things, but better ones. Pieces that are well-made and easy to wear all the time. That's why I keep coming back to Quince. The fabrics feel elevated, the fits are thoughtful, and the pricing actually makes sense. Quince makes high-quality, everyday essentials using premium materials like 100% European linen and their insanely soft, flow-knit activewear fabric. Their men's linen pants and shirts are lightweight, breathable, and comfortable. Basically, the perfect layer for spring. The pants strike the right balance between laid back and refined, so you look put together without trying too hard. And their flow knit activewear, moisture wicking, anti-odor, and soft enough you'll actually want to wear it all day. The best part is that their pieces are 50 to 60% less than similar brands. How, you ask? Quince works directly with ethical factories and cuts out the middleman, so you're paying for quality, not brand markup. Everything is designed to at least make getting dressed easy. Guys, you heard me talk about in the winter how I loved Quince for when I was going home to the cold weather up north. Well, now the Flowknit activewear is perfect for this Florida spring and the upcoming summer. I'm super happy with it. And like I've always said, the Quince website is super fun to shop. You got to go out and check out Quince. Refresh your wardrobe with Quince. Go to quince.com/crypto101 for free shipping and 365-day returns. Now available in Canada too. Go to Quince. quince.com/crypto101 for free shipping and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/crypto101. There's a world of opportunity out there beyond the typical 9-to-5, where purpose and grit and the American spirit come together in the Peace Corps. It's been called the toughest job you'll ever love. Tough because it asks so much of you, and the love part is knowing your hard work can transform lives and build bridges across cultures. After 65 years, the Peace Corps is still the toughest job you'll ever love. Explore opportunities in more than 60 countries and apply at peacecorps.gov/serve. All right, everybody, welcome back to another Crypto Rundown. Big money is making big moves, and you're in the right place today because we're going to break it all down from the macro news, which there is some to talk about at the top of the show, to where the big money is going. And listen, we've talked about it on the show recently a lot. It's Morgan Stanley, the Bitcoin ETF. There's reports that it's going live this week, and take that data along with a lot of other things that you're going to want to listen to in this show. It is, I don't want to say it's a fact, Brian. I want to say there's like, it's a fact. I'm sorry. I'm going to have to say it. It's a fact. This is where the big money's going. It's just a fact. I hate to use that language, but if you're a retailer that's selling and saying crypto is dead, which is all over the timeline recently, I have to think you might want to check this show out because it really does kind of tie together all the things we've been talking about over the last couple of weeks, backed with some data. So it's going to be super fun to talk about it. We've got a double dip this week. Brian and TiVo on Tuesday. Brian and TiVo scheduled to be promoted on Friday this week as well. So you got us twice this week. We had a great episode come out. If you missed it, go back. It's with Coinbase's head of global investment, which, I mean, what a pull. David Duong, great conversation with him. He kind of explained why the four-year cycle in his mind is not acting like everybody thought it would by extending. So it was a great interview there. And then a little tidbit for everybody. After we record today, Bryce Paul's back, folks. Bryce Paul is coming back from paternity leave. Super excited. We have an interview with KPMG, one of the big five accounting firms. Unbelievable. Like, this is what we're talking about, Brian. Wall Street's coming in. It's basically what we're going to talk about here. The big money continues to come in. KPMG coming on the Crypto 101 podcast. I'll tell you this. When I started, what is it now, like 3.5-4 years ago, when I got brought into the team here, I never thought we'd be interviewing KPMG. I'll tell you that. Brian, welcome. How are you, my friend?
Hey, man, I'm doing great. A lot of exciting things to talk about. Good to have good old Bryce back, our fearless leader. Absolutely crushing it in more ways than one at Parenthood and then back into the trenches of the crypto market with us. So love to have him back. And I love to be here on the rundown with you, man. We're going to have some fun.
Yeah, absolutely. It's going to be a good one. Not promoted today, but if you are catching the live, give it a thumbs up. And let us know where you're watching in from, as always. But to start off the show, there is some macro news to talk about. We're just going to touch on it quick. You know, unless you're living under a rock, You've been seeing what's been going on over the weekend, obviously with the war in Iran, and there seems to be a deadline. So we're recording this at 2 p.m. Tuesday, April 7th. There is a deadline tonight that the president of the United States has set for, you know, hopefully some negotiations to happen, or he's threatening another attack of some sort, an aerial raid or whatever. Again, that's not why you come to this show, but just to touch on it, I think, you know, I guess the traditional markets close in 2 hours time. The deadline's at 8 p.m. I don't know. I mean, it's hard to, it's gambling at this point if you want to take what's going to happen on either side, right? We always say we don't have a crystal ball. If anybody's telling you they do, unless they're inside the circle of the administration, they do not know what's going to happen by 8 o'clock tonight or what happens when we wake up tomorrow. Are these, you know, are these threats backed by an actual plan? Is this just rhetoric? We don't know. Brian, anything to add? But it is something that we wanted to note on the top of the show, because we're going to go over what's going on in the markets, the price action today, and what we see. So we don't want to, you know, if something does happen later tonight and this episode is out, you know, we just want to clarify that, you know, there is a seemingly hard deadline tonight at 8 p.m. Anything to add there, Brian?
Yeah, I mean, you touched on it. You don't come here to learn about, like, you know, the conflict of Iran and the United States, but obviously it's directly correlated to what we are doing every single day. And I do not want to make light of this situation, because it's a terrible situation that's happening. Would like to be as far away from that as possible. I would probably be absolutely freaking out if we heard this from anybody other than Trump and on Truth Social, because he gets a little bit crazy with those fingers every once in a while, saying exactly what's on his mind. But don't want to make light of essentially his threat to Iran. So we could see some volatile action right around this deadline that he's posted. But the market overall, I know we're going to jump in, hasn't seemed to really react as sharply. You know, if this was months ago, or when we first got into this conflict, or even if it was another administration, we would probably, you know, tank pretty hard on any sort of like hard deadline of essentially threatening to, you know, wipe the existence of a country that you're in war with. So it is not something to take lightly. I mean, this is the days. Things like this is the days when the fear and greed meter, we should be in that extreme fear. You know, we were sitting at like a 9 extreme fear a few months ago, and it didn't really make a lot of sense. But today, with obviously some major geopolitical news that we're all kind of like, what the heck's going to happen? We're sitting at a 35. So I guess my overall take is the market, I don't want to say it's not taking it seriously, because everyone should take this very seriously, but the market doesn't seem to be reacting as sharply with this deadline that's going to be happening. But it's definitely something we're going to want to keep close eyes on.
Yeah, I think it's hard to compare this to the tariff thing, which we have done on the show, because I think that's what the market's saying is they've been so, you know, there's people, especially larger traditional finance hedge funds, that got caught so offsides during the tariff run that it's like, all right, he loves his rhetoric. We've seen him now for, you know, I guess this is year 6 of a president, you know, 2 terms, but year 6 dealing with him at the helm, and markets just, you know, they're not going to get too far off sides. And traditionally, I saw a stat, this is for the S&P, but traditionally over the history of war, the majority of the wars going back to World War I, the markets have bottomed during the first 10% of the duration of the war. So, you know, obviously some wars last, you know, a long time, you know, years, but there's other ones obviously in our history of different operations that have lasted months, and all that aggregate together, the majority, the price bottoms of the S&P in the first 10%. So I think the only thing we could say on this one is, you know, with this type of, you know, conflict, it doesn't seem like it's going to last years or even possibly a year, right? So the odds are that, at least for the S&P, history shows, odds are the S&P should have bottomed probably by now. But We do not know. We are not in the administration. We do not have any inside information. So let's just do what we do here at the Crypto 101 podcast. Let's talk markets. Let's talk news. Because even through this fog of war, big money is making moves. That's why you clicked on the thumbnail. That's what you want to hear. So let's dive into the price action. As Brian said, look, across the 1 hour, the 24 hour, you know, minus 1%, nothing really to sneeze at across the board. No big price movements at all. So that leads us to be like, okay, well, what can we talk about? There's a lot of stuff going on around big money moves. And let's start with the ETF flows. Brian, you pulled these stats. I'll tee this up and hand it off to you.
Yeah, I mean, this is yesterday, and this is some of the biggest ETF flows that we've seen, I think, in the last month and a half. Bitcoin, as you can see, respectively, did about $471 million into a positive ETF flow yesterday, which is huge. It's a $500 million, especially when we saw over, you know, a few weeks ago when the fear and greed meter and we were all really nervous about things, we were seeing a lot of outflows. Now we're starting to see a lot of inflows. And then even Ethereum had over 100, I think it was $120 million in inflows. So this is the biggest inflows that we've seen in a month and a half. And there's a lot of indicators out there. You just mentioned the one about the S&P, and it's correlated about hitting a bottom at the first 10% of like any sort of conflict. There's even some things I read earlier today that Bitcoin's RSI is nearly perfectly copying the end of the 2022 bear market. So that's really interesting as well. So there's some indicators here, and I'm not calling a bottom because who the heck knows? I mean, we literally had a sitting president make a pretty direct threat earlier today, and I wasn't sure how the market was going to react. So I can't, this is a little bit different than other cycles, but it does feel like we're in this channel we've been talking about in this chop zone. It does feel like it's going to take a lot to really wash us out. We're seeing major players get involved, and we're seeing these positive inflows, which is absolutely wonderful to see.
Yeah, let's check out Ethereum too. Did you get any Ethereum stats?
I think you have to scan all the way to the right. It doesn't come up on the thing if you go all the way to the right, but it's 120 million yesterday.
Got it.
Yeah, 118 million. Yeah, we just saw right there. But, you know, so a lot of money has gone into these ETFs. So, like I said, 470 and 120 respectively. And then I know Solana and XRP, they weren't coming up there, were positive as well. And just another article to kind of just show the block picked up that this is a single day inflow record in the last 6 weeks. And I know we had some massive inflows initially when the ETFs first came out. We were seeing $1 billion days. But this just seemed like a really impactful number, because I think the biggest part of it is like, why are we seeing these major inflows? You know, there's not like a really big reason or catalyst that I'm like, oh yeah, I was expecting to wake up to $500 million worth of inflows, especially with what we kind of been hearing around, you know, choppiness in the Clarity Act, and we've been all this Iran conflict. So it certainly feels like smart money is trying to get more exposure to our favorite cryptocurrencies. Ooh. And I'm here for it. Bring it in, buy it up, bring the checkbook, because it's time to do it.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that, because it's an absolute seamless transition to this. This is via River, and CoinDesk posted it, but it's the, change of ownership for Bitcoin in Q1 2026. And to your point, some people are using these ETFs to buy up our favorite cryptos. Well, who's buying and who's selling in Q1? As you can see here on the right there, individuals, 62,000 selling, businesses eat it up and then more, plus 69,000. Governments are buying it. Funds and ETFs are a vehicle that they're using there, also in the positive. So super interesting. This is Bitcoin specific. So surely, obviously, Sailor has a decent size, a number in there for the businesses. But I think it's interesting to tee up what you just said, building off of your point, but also to kind of tee us up for the next couple topics of where is this going? And it seems like big money continues to just pile in and set the guardrails and be there for when this, I'll clarify, if this Clarity Act passes. I don't know, man. Is this legislation going to be the launch pad? And then clearing up the fog of war, is it going to be a launch pad? Is it the fact that Bitcoin and Ethereum have actually been some of the best performers in this six, you know, five, 6 week period of the fog of war? it like you start kind of figuring it out. And as we like to say on the show, zoom out. It is looking like a good setup. And I think we have to say, hey, we're the Crypto 101 podcast. Yes, maybe we're a little biased, but the numbers don't lie. So we see the individuals selling in Q1, businesses, governments, funds, and ETFs, they're buying. And then who's launching? Who's launching, you know, crypto products? The traditional finance, the huge Wall Street. This is the big one of the big dogs, Morgan Stanley. Finally, we saw a report. It's like, it looks like the Morgan Stanley spot Bitcoin ETF could go live tomorrow. That's per Bloomberg. And when this goes live, it will be, if I'm not mistaken, Brian, the first Bitcoin ETF by a bank.
I believe, and this is spot, which is really interesting as well. This is spot Bitcoin. So this is going to be a huge signal in my eyes. Yeah, it's the first major Wall Street bank to offer a spot Bitcoin ETF. So this is going to open huge floodgates for massive traditional finance inflows. This is something we've been talking about for over the past year and a half, is how big these big banks, these big institutions are continuing to buy and acquire crypto. And this is an absolutely huge move, I think. Again, it kind of goes a little bit under the radar because there's enough FUD out there that people want to talk about. But this is an absolutely huge move by Morgan Stanley. I love to see it. I think this is awesome that this isn't just another ETF. I think everybody needs to understand that because it's correlated with this spot Bitcoin.
It's a great point. And again, I think Morgan Stanley is such a traditional, and some people might not like this, I guess, but it's just the amount of money that they manage, it's hard to equate to some of, you know, the smaller players on Wall Street. These are, you know, Morgan Stanley might be the firm to bring the SpaceX IPO, right? Like, we're talking about trillions and trillions of dollars, and they're making, we covered this on the last show, but they're making sure that their spot ETF is the lowest fees on the market. So then their money managers are going to have no qualm of saying, hey, we're going to start allocating you to a little bit of Bitcoin. We're going to use the Morgan Stanley one. It's the best in class, the lowest in fees. Oh, something that we've said similar to the BlackRock ETF, and have their money managers pitch the BlackRock ETF, but they aren't the lowest in fees, but maybe they make the argument, hey, we were a leader in the space. We're the first to market. We have the most secure. We have the most liquidity. But I think that's the most interesting thing. I think it will be the liquidity, right? It's like, hey, how much liquidity is in this spot ETF? Is it going to bring in options players? Is it going to bring in enough liquidity to be getting people in and out? Or is it more of a buy and hold play for a longer term? I don't know. It's fascinating to cover. But again, just to kind of recap, it's like, hey, who's buying? Morgan Stanley wants to buy. Who's selling? Retail. Yeah, I don't know. You don't always want to be on the same boat as retail, even though I will say retail has traded really well over the last couple of years as a whole. There's some really cool stats on that. And then just to add in, we talked about this last week with the Citadel wanting to become a crypto bank. As they file for federal crypto bank charters. But it was just this graphic I saw. I just gave it a retweet because it really kind of just it gave it a summary so good with just, you know, a couple logos. It's like, who wants to become a crypto bank? Citadel, Fidelity, Charles Schwab, EDX. I'm like, man, crazy how far we've come for all this stuff. And I think it kind of goes to the point. If we talk about it again, I'll bring this graphic back up. It's like, hey, who wants to own crypto? Who wants to own this space? And this shows you businesses, governments, and the individuals are flooding out. So it's an interesting dance. But that's kind of the topic here. Is like, hey, big money moves. That's the title of the YouTube video. That's the thumbnail you saw. So it's like, hey, who's making big money moves? Morgan Stanley's leading the way this week. But a plethora of companies want to get into the space and continue to build. So, Brian, what are your thoughts on kind of the summary of this big money move?
Yeah, I mean, you nailed it. I mean, the proof's in the pudding right here. We're seeing big players, big institutions, huge amounts of money. I think Morgan Stanley has like 16,000 advisors or something I read earlier today. And I want to clarify, when we say spot Bitcoin ETF, that means the fund must buy and hold real actual Bitcoin in custody. to issue shares for it. So that's a tremendous name. It's a tremendous amount of advisors that are going to be involved. And there's other major brands out there that do that. You know, BlackRock does that. I believe Fidelity does that. Grayscale, Bitwise, ARK, you know. But it's great to see Morgan Stanley jump into that boat. And then these are just huge names here. When you showed up that graphic of the bar graphic of institutions buying in retail essentially selling, I'll tell you this much. I'm trying to keep the boat afloat for us individuals. I'm dollar cost averaging in. I'm doing everything I can, but I'm only one guy out here. Not financial advice, but I do like to follow kind of where, you know, the businesses, the governments, the funds and the ETFs, the people that probably have a little bit more inside knowledge about some things, have a good grasp about some things, what's FUD, what's not, and what they're doing. I don't think these businesses, governments, countries, millionaires, billionaires, funds, ETFs, wherever you want to go, are buying Bitcoin to sell tomorrow, to sell in a couple months. So this is, again, zoom out, long-term play. I get it. Nobody likes volatility in the moment. But personally, I feel like there will be a time when we find that local bottom and then we start grinding back up. And then everyone's starting to pay attention a little bit, those retail investors. Uncle Don in Pittsburgh, so he'll be calling me a little bit again, asking me if it's time to buy Bitcoin, but we're going to probably be all well on our way to that next rocket ship. I'm feeling pretty good about where the market is, to be honest with you. I wish the price was higher, but we got a lot of issues out there, you know, shaking some dollars out, but it does feel like it's stabilized, and now we're getting more and more indications with these ETF flows, with these major banks that want to become crypto banks. We got Morgan Stanley's of the world getting involved. It's not like we're making this up. You know, we're not just like, you know, Googling the most bullish headlines in crypto. This is really happening right now. it's happening right now. It should make everyone feel a little bit more comfortable holding their bags, in my opinion, because this is smart money. This is people that really have an understanding of where the economy's going.
Great points. I think, we're not Googling the best crypto news to give to you. We scour it and we try our best. And to this point on the individual selling, one thing, a data point that I saw recently, probably a couple weeks ago, was and I can't remember if we brought it up on the show, but it was the prediction market odds that Bitcoin would fall under 50K this year, and it rocketed up to, I think it was like 60-65%. Which again is it's possible, right? A lot of the technicians were looking at what 42 is the next level. If we break here, we're going straight down to 42. So again, there's people that, you know, chart it and think and bulls and bears, and that's what makes a market. But I thought it was really interesting while we're, you know, in the 60 to 70 range of just the overwhelming majority now thinks we're going below 50. And that kind of, again, as you've heard me say on the show, I don't like to be on the same side of the boat as everybody else. And I think this kind of graphic that we have up still shows that as the individuals are selling, individuals are starting to bet we're under 50. So again, could that happen? Absolutely. Absolutely. But it starts to maybe be a crowded trade a little bit. And as again, Morgan Stanley's launching spot Bitcoin ETFs. And then, you know, who else is buying nonetheless than Mike Saylor? He's always buying, right? It's a perpetual buy. This comment down here made me laugh by Coin Terminal, because this isn't a position anymore. It's a black hole. That's like, it's just, it's literally on repeat with this guy. And then of course, Tom Lee approaching basically at 4%. He's, you know, Bitmine. They have said that they are going for the alchemy of 5%. They just bought another $4.8 million of Ethereum this week as well. So again, final reference to that graphic is who's buying? Businesses, governments, who's selling? Individuals. So again, we'll see. That's what makes a market, the buys and sells, the bulls and the bears. And we'll see when the dust settles. It'll be interesting to see what the next major move is, because we've been covering this. We've been saying it. Hey, the fundamentals are leading and the price is not. And so when will the price catch up to the fundamentals is something that we're always looking out for. Kind of changing tune here. We'll go over to some stable coins. I saw that Circle chose Solana to become ground zero for their stable coin mint. So I thought that was interesting of Circle choosing Solana. I feel like there's there's obviously tons of chains to choose from, but it kind of, at least from the blue chip mega cap standpoint, it's, you know, Ethereum versus Solana. And Circle's had a lot in the news lately, so they chose Solana. Does that get you excited, Brian, or anything, or just kind of, is this no news, cool news? What do you feel about this?
Yeah, this is cool news, man. I'm a Solana guy too. You know, I see a lot of paths for certain blockchains to really carve out their niche, and this is great. Circle's an absolute enormous company. So with them partnering with Solana, Solana's not going anywhere either. I mean, we usually, when we even talk about CoinMarketCap, or I talk about with our community, the three cryptos, there's some other ones, obviously, but the three cryptos I really talk about are Bitcoin, Ethereum, and Solana, to just get a frame of where the macro, where the majors are, where the crypto market is, for good reason. So to see a Circle make this adoption to the Solana blockchain is amazing. So we're going to see how this continues to go. This certainly is not bad for our Solana bags.
No, we just had a conversation go out recently with the Solana Foundation. So another great episode. I've been on a couple rants of how, you know, we're always looking for builders in this market, right? And the Crypto 101 podcast is certainly continues to build. We've had some heavy, heavy hitters come on the program recently. And staying with Circle, they throw their hat in the ring with a quantum resistance blockchain roadmap. So this is all the rage right now. It's the popularity of, hey, we've got answers to quantum. We've got, you know, it's everybody's got a roadmap for quantum to break Bitcoin. And now everybody's got a roadmap to protect themselves against quantum. Again, I think this is something that is worth keeping track of over the coming months and years, because, again, it seems to be a narrative that has taken over our space. And everybody and anybody is going to try and get kind of the soundbite out there that we have a quantum roadmap. And then, you know, it's up to kind of the people that are experts in this to kind of break it all down. Brian, as our resident quantum expert, does this get you excited?
Yeah, I guess there's a lot of talk around this quantum computing for good reason. It's something we really need to be taking seriously, and it needs to be addressed. And not just in the crypto markets, across all of these, you know, platforms and companies. The one big difference between certain blockchains are more quantum resistant, certain blockchains are a little bit farther ahead with their quantum resistance implementation. Bitcoin isn't the most vulnerable to quantum computing as well. Hopefully everyone can understand that. There's only a few million addresses that could actually be impacted. But the big problem with that and with this whole quantum computing with Bitcoin is that there's no CEO. We've talked about this around Bitcoin. They have solutions. Let's just use Satoshi's coins, for instance. His millions of coins. People are like, well, that's in a vulnerable address. That could essentially, you know, get hacked through quantum computing. And what's going to happen? And they do have paths. There's a path where they could fork the chain. There's a path where they could burn those tokens. There's a path, I guess, they could figure out how to move them. But they have solutions here. The biggest issue is not so much the technical solution issue of fixing this. It's more just the psychology of, we need to, like, everybody kind of needs to get aligned with how they're going to fix this. But I do believe that this will come to fruition, and a lot of these implementations will come about with the more and more big players that get involved. The Circles, the Arcs, the Coinbases, the Ethereum Foundations. We're hearing more and more people talk about it. It is not something, I promise you right now, I will come on this rundown and tell you when we're supposed to be scared of quantum computing, because I'm the quantum computing expert. That's a little tongue-in-cheek there, but I watch this space pretty closely, because I do see this could be a threat in 2029, according to Google research paper, 2030 to a lot of people. But there is a path, there's a solution here. And with all these big names, like I said, the Arcs, the Circles, the Coinbases, the Ethereum Foundations, and there's way more people out there that are taking this seriously, I think this is going to be a blip on the radar. We're going to get over this, and it's not going to, like, it's ever going to, never even happened. But it's a great headline. It's a great way to get clicks, scare people with quantum computing, because nobody really fully, unless you go down, fully understands what the challenge is with quantum computing and what the issue could be. And like I was saying earlier, Bitcoin's quantum challenges are more social than technical. It's not a technical issue. There's a handful of solutions they have. It's just everyone really needs to get aligned. And I think that's going to happen. There's enough big BlackRock's. Larry Fink's not going to let everyone, you know, he's going to call everyone in a room and be like, you're not allowed to leave until we have this figured out. And I believe that's going to happen.
That's where I was going to take it. Was it's like, you know, as much as the decentralization of the space is what brings in a lot of people. And maybe that's why a lot of whales, you know, we've seen a lot of dormant wallets, right, wake up and sell a lot of Bitcoin. And maybe that's, you know, they found their price and they're ready to get out. Maybe it's because, you know, some of these Wall Street people are coming in. They don't want to be a part of that. That's a possibility as well. But what I will say is, for this quantum problem, it's like, dude, you got BlackRock, you got Morgan Stanley coming in now. We've got Franklin Templeton, Charles Schwab. It's going to be these businesses have to deal with the quantum threat on so many different levels, just like any business will, just like individuals will, right? It's all of our, you know, accounts of anything can, you know, be hacked by this stuff. So if it really is 2029, 2030, you're going to start seeing a lot of businesses kind of be thought leaders around this on how they're going to do it and how they're going to protect their own businesses and their own funds and their own online banking. Because again, once Bitcoin is a threat, the entire financial system is a threat. So these upgrades and this work in quantum is going to be going on nonstop. And then by that point, there's going to be stuff that even before it needs to be done, there's probably going to be test studies and there's going to be lessons learned. And these, you know, institutions are, like you said, going to lead the way. And, you know, yeah, it will. Could there be a split? Absolutely. But when that time comes, you're going to be at least have all, not all the information, but a lot of information from all the thought leaders, you know, the Michael Saylors of the world, the Larry Finks, the Morgan Stanleys, to see where this thing lies and where it's going. So again, I think it's a time of learning. It's a time of growth. It is, and it's going to be exciting to cover. And that's what we're here to do at Crypto 101. So any final thoughts?
Yeah, my final thought is I would be a lot more concerned if people were just jamming crap down our throat, telling us it wasn't something we needed to worry about or we're going to push this off. But there's people actively looking to solve the technical issue. And it really, from what I can tell, there are some real solutions here. It's just getting everybody aligned. And I think, just to reiterate what I said and you said, I think with all these big name players there, that will happen. But it's a great way to get clicks on articles. It's a great way to get clicks on videos. We know that because when people hear quantum computing and it's scary when you really look at it at face value. But when you dig into the details, you're like, oh, wait, there's a solution here. There's a solution to fix this. And I think it's going to happen. But we'll be reporting on it. You know, every time that I'm pretty much on here, you're on here, we'll be talking about it. I'm not getting caught off guard with any quantum computing crap. I've worked too hard, you know, my Bitcoin, to stack my crypto. So, yeah. You know, we'll keep you in the loop as much as we can. But I think this isn't as big of a deal as what some of these articles are making it out to be. But we're starting to get some pro-quantum articles, too, like this right here.
And be excited to learn about it, because again, it's the same thing. What's more scary, like learning about quantum computing and the effects it could have in the world, or, you know, when you first learned about the government and the money printer and inflation? Once you swallow that burger, it's like, hey, you can learn anything to protect your sovereignty and your funds. So dive into it. Be excited for the future. You know, that's kind of what we all got into the space for to begin with, right? So I think it's more exciting than not. And I think you got to be aware. If you have any friends, I would challenge anybody who, if you talk to them or bring up the quantum threat and somebody just immediately goes, oh, that's not a threat. It's all just headlines. It's all just headlines. An opinion to have, but like I would challenge that person and you know, wonder why they don't even want to learn about it. You know what I mean? I think you might want to be careful if you have any, whether it's an influencer or somebody you respect in the space or a friend that just, you know, brushes it off. I think it's something that you need to kind of keep tabs on and learn as, and I think the cool thing about this is there's obviously people who are way smarter than us that understand this stuff that are going to be thought leaders, but I think everybody's learning together. Like the space is going to learn together. And again, there's probably going to be multiple thoughts around this. So, what better place to learn than here at the Crypto 101 podcast, as we all ways learn together. Keeping in the stablecoin and going back to the Poly market, decentralized market here. Let's see. Poly market is ditching USDC and launching its own stablecoin. Did you see this? I thought you might like this. I put it on here today.
I did see this, and I think they're going through, I don't want to get this completely wrong, but I think they're going through some upgrades as well for this, and they're going to, like, wipe orders. And, like, I think if you have, they're going to, like, wipe order books clear for a while, and if you have, like, a bot, that'll probably get wiped out as well. So it's a pretty big announcement. It's probably fueling a lot of, like, speculation, like, how that their token could be incorporated here. But Polymarket's continuing to evolve. I think it's on the sheet somewhere, but they're absolutely printing money right now, these prediction markets, and there's a lot of controversy around them as well. We've touched about this as well. But yeah, this is a big upgrade here, and it's super interesting news, something we're going to be watching really closely.
Yeah, I think I wonder, I don't have any inside information, but once the Clarity Act goes through, a lot of the focus is on stablecoin rewards and what can you do with it. And I don't know if this would be kind of lopped into a positioning for that to say, hey, we're actually going to launch our own stablecoin, because then we kind of have an inside, you know, and I'm not saying they have an inside track or not, but clearly, the rise to stardom that Shane and Polymarket and just all betting markets are, maybe there's people that have a little information for them. And it's saying, hey, this is what we think is going to be the rules of the road for stablecoins. And then maybe that it's something that they can kind of, like we saw on Kalshi, right, Brian? It was like you can get some yield from your account. And so maybe that's something they're looking at. Like, hey, once we figure out the rules of the road, the Clarity Act and stablecoins, we could offer something while also making some money too. So again, I don't have an idea of what that could be other than some type of yield or rewards for your idle cash, or maybe the cash that you lock up for a bet that won't clear for a year. That would be interesting as well. So stuff that, again, we're just going to keep noting here. Whenever we see something worth talking about, that's what we do. We bring it up. And then, funny enough, friend of the show is Jamie Crypto Diamond looking into prediction markets, something you threw on the sheet.
Yeah, Jamie Prediction Diamond's back at it right here, and it looks like they're interested. I mean, for good reason. These prediction markets, everyone's got one right now. Gemini, Coinbase, and, you know, love them or hate them. He is saying that they're going to rule out, if they go in this direction, which if he's talking about it now, they're definitely going in that direction. Guy's most calculated interviewer of all time. They're rolling out two sectors, and I believe that's sports and politics. You know what they're probably going after? They're probably going after, like, the crypto trading on these prediction markets, like Bitcoin's 5-minute price, Bitcoin's price by the end of the day. They get massive action. It's essentially perps, what you're doing. And even at one of our live events, we were just showing people Polymarket how it worked, and we did a 5-minute price action change, and it felt like everybody in the audience was, like, loving it. It's just catching a lot of steam here. And these prediction markets are still making money hand over fist. Yeah, is that the tweet from Tyler? Let me bring it up here. $165 million last week for Polymarket, $293 million last week for Kalshi, and they're driving $1 billion per week in crypto market volume. So it's a big driving factor. So if JP Morgan and Jamie Dimon are saying, hey, we're interested in prediction markets, they're interested because there's a lot of money there, and there's interest.
Yeah.
So the prediction market super cycle still lives on.
One of your calls, an unbelievable call. You were really, really early to this stuff. And it's been fun. It's been fun to dive in, and get some plays. I know, like you said, when we had that in-person event, with our team, the audience was just locked into the, you know, what'd you guys do, an hour, like Bitcoin price for an hour, or what was it? Five minutes.
It was, I think it was a 5-minute trade. I got to go back.
I can't believe you did that. But then people were wondering, like, how did it play out? I can't believe. So maybe it was an hour or something. I don't know.
Maybe it was like 30 minutes.
I remember one time people were like, did we win the bet?
Ooh, you're right. It was like 3 p.m. Eastern time or something. I remember Joe actually executed the trade on my account. And we did win, whatever it was. But we didn't get all the order filled or anything. You know, we were doing it live. We were just showing people how it worked. And we took like a little vote in the audience, not financial advice. Nobody else was involved. This is my own personal funds. And we brought a winner, you know, and we'll probably do more fun things like that in person and utilize these prediction markets, because It is gambling. I mean, I know, like, you know, it is gambling to one point, but, you know, there's a lot of action there. There's a lot of interesting ways to possibly farm a token. They're making a lot of money. They're bringing a lot of opportunities, and then you can get some killer information on them. So I love the prediction markets. I do think that they probably need to, you know, knock off some, like, there's a few issues out there with insider trading and some of the markets that they open, but, you know, someone more powerful and more involved than me will work all of that out. I'm just here for the fun.
We'll do it live. That's what we do here. We do it prediction markets with people. We do it live here on YouTube, and we thank everybody for joining us. I had some people trickling in and out. Really appreciate everybody joining the live. Again, give it a thumbs up if you can. Bottom right, if you're new, hit the subscribe button. We do this multiple times a week, and we love everybody that joins us. Let's see. What else do we got here to cover? Well, I don't know. This might be one of our last shows, because apparently Bitcoin's going to zero, Brian. Once again, there's a viral clip, a new one, Diary of a CEO podcast, really great listen. But there was a viral clip going around in the last 24 hours of this thesis of why Bitcoin's going to zero. And it was a little bit of a newer one, at least one that hasn't circulated for a while. So let's tune in, and then we can debate on the back end.
I wanted to come back to something you actually said earlier. You talked about Bitcoin briefly.
Yeah.
I've heard you say that you think Bitcoin's going to zero.
Yeah.
Okay, this is worrying. I think I have some Bitcoin. You're an economist.
Yeah.
You're saying that Bitcoin is going to zero. Why?
Because of its reliance upon energy. I mean, Max Kaiser and Stacey Herbert, have you met them at all?
No.
They were sort of the original proselytizers for Bitcoin, and they're now living in, I think, El Salvador. Which has adopted Bitcoin as a form of currency. When they told me about Bitcoin, I could have bought it for a pound of Bitcoin, which would have been, I would have been maybe wealthier than you if I'd done that. The reason I didn't is they explained that the way that the public ledger is kept safe is that it takes too much energy to break it. So each transaction requires 10 minutes of computer processing time globally, by the looks of it, to actually create an extra Bitcoin. And that means it's too expensive for somebody to try to break the ledger. That means it's got a huge requirement for energy use. And I believe, knowing what I know from climate scientists, that at some point we're going to realize we're using far too much energy on the planet. We've got to cut the energy consumption. And the two easiest things to cut out to reduce energy consumption are cryptocurrencies and international travel.
What a wrap up.
Tell me you could have bought Bitcoin at £1 and didn't. You know?
Yeah.
tell me that there's a little bit of hate there.
That's the number one thing about that argument. It's like, wait, this has been your thesis since Bitcoin was $1? So
yeah.
So technically you're wrong. Like, you've already been proven wrong. We went up, you know, to 120,000 since you had this thesis, so you're wrong. And then just like on the back end for me, it's like, you know, you're just, the climate, you know, scientists say we're going to have to cut out international travel and Bitcoin. It's like, that's your two things. Internet. Like, I can't go to Europe. I can't do Euro summer, and I can't have my Bitcoin. This guy, I don't know who he is. I should have looked that up. That's a ding on me. Cause clearly to be on a show like that, you gotta be somebody. But Brian, break it down. You had a great tweet, you know, really put some time in. If you're not following us on X, make sure you do, because we're always having a lot of fun on there. But break down your thesis. I'll try and find out who this guy is.
Yeah, well, to start things off, this is why I go to Crypto 101 podcast Twitter account to find information, because I didn't even see that viral tweet going around until I got an alert from Crypto 101. And I don't chime in a lot on Twitter because, you know, I save it for the rundown in our community and everything. But this just kind of, this got me a little bit, because it's like 2022 all over again. You know, let's scare some people with quantum computing and tell everyone that, you know, cryptocurrency and Bitcoin isn't green enough and it's taking all the energy away. It's a real point. It's a fair point by this guy about energy and energy matters. That's absolutely the truth. But Bitcoin mining is already running on over 50% sustainable energy. So that's one big thing. And we're becoming more and more efficient with the that power. It's getting better every single year. So the efficiency continues to keep getting better. We're already utilizing over 50% of sustainable energy. And what was the article I looked? On a Cambridge April 2025 study. So this is one of the newest studies. So that means a ton whenever you're looking at this, because we're using this 50% reusable energy, which would have otherwise probably gone to waste at the end of the day. So this is a really interesting take by this economist that he's kind of going after cryptocurrencies, and also will be very difficult. The U.S. government and a lot of people around the world have been trying to kill cryptocurrencies for years. When they realized they couldn't kill Bitcoin anymore, they started to embracing it, and now we're seeing major institutions buying it. So energy is, I think I put, energy's proof of work, and efficiency keeps getting better every year. And Bitcoin's not going anywhere. There was even a really good tweet, a guy, Stella Blue, who also jumped in and talked about this as well. And what he said makes some really good points. But this tweet is absolutely overblown, in my opinion. I'm not aligned with this. I understand how valuable energy is and how we need to become more efficient. But the banking system, gold mining, all of these other legacy systems take up way more energy than Bitcoin could even dream. And they're not even utilizing all the sustainable energy that would go to waste that Bitcoin's using now.
Great points. I love you calling out Stella Blue. We always appreciate when people interact. I told Stella Blue I wanted to give him a shout out on the pod. So he says, this is from a friend of the show, Stella Blue. He's not wrong fundamentally. However, Bitcoin can't be stopped. But he's on to something, and it's why Bitcoin is so valuable. Ultimately, Bitcoin is power, and in the end, energy will be money, which is, again, that's not a new take. It's something that I think Elon Musk has kind of danced around that. And what we're seeing now with all these AI agents is that's what you're paying for. Your credits equal, you know, a run of your AI agent, which is based off the consumption of what's the energy it costs to run the AI agent. So this whole credit system, what's the future of money, money's energy. It's a great conversation to have. And I think something that I really enjoyed Stella Blue saying at the end here is, you know, just kind of a great overall thing to look at the space. So plenty of smart people could care less about it and absolutely don't care. But more importantly, people hate change and having to learn something new. A secret of life is embracing the challenge of learning new things. We are still early, but the writing is on the wall. It's basically a great summary of this whole episode. What we just said with quantum computing, don't be afraid to learn. And kind of saying here with, hey, we are early. And I think, again, you're not as early as day one. Clearly, there's been plenty of other cycles. But if you're somebody that's new into the space in the last year and maybe the price action, you're looking at it and saying, I'm going to take my ball and leave. You know, you got to make your own financial decisions, no doubt. But it is very interesting to be in a space before the Morgan Stanleys of the world, before the BlackRocks came into the world, right? And so, again, embrace new things, embrace the challenge of learning, and it's going to be, you know, it's going to be a ride, and you're in the right spot. I'll tell you, somebody's in the right spot. Ozzie Murray said he subbed. Thank you, Ozzie. Where are you from, bud?
Yeah.
We got Andy. Andy's here from Liverpool. And so I can't pronounce that one, but I know he's on Twitter because he was sending me new art. What's that name? Chun. Chun was sending me old art that he says I should replace my Bitcoin Mona Lisa with something, I guess, because I was getting yelled at in the last episode. So friend of the show, Chun, great to see you guys in the chat. Been really fun having everybody. Last point. We didn't get to it on the Momentum Moneymakers update, but I saw this. Giant plushy pudgy penguin taking over. I don't know, is that New York City in the background? And then I just got peppered with ads for the giant Pengu plush. Brian, are you getting one for the kids?
I'm not, man. That thing's too big. I don't even know what I would do with it. Like, it's you know, that is an aggressive size plushie. I'm sure people are buying it. I mean, this just goes to show you, we talk about this a lot, that Pengu, the Pudgy Penguins brand, it's one of my favorite, like, brand and meme coins out there, and it's certainly got whacked down with the rest of the market, but they're continuing to just produce content, games, videos, TV series, these giant plushies. You're starting to see more and more people about it. And even back to our boy Stella Blue, that tweet, I went to go look at his, I just made him a friend on Twitter because I was kind of vibing with the stuff he was talking about. He's talking about health is wealth. And then he had Pengu in his title of his X account. And I was like, oh, this is my guy. So he had a great take and love to see him supporting the Pengu token. But this just goes to show you that the Pudgy Penguin teams can continue rolling stuff out hand over fist. And I love to see it. We're in a bear market. We're in a market where, you know, we're talking about geopolitical stuff and on-chain activity feels as low as it's ever been. It really does. You know, I'm a meme coin guy. I'm a brand coin guy. I love myself some AI agents, but people aren't speculating as much because we're all just kind of watching the market, what direction it's going to go. But people still want to speculate. I can guarantee you that. And there's going to be the next wave of momentum that we're all going to be. And I have some ideas of what that could be. But I don't think Pengu is going to be left behind. They're just too big of a brand right now. And they continue to produce, you know, likable, strong content that's not just focused on the crypto world. This is focused on, I mean, I guess whoever wants a giant pudgy. Let me kick it back over to you and ask you, where are you putting your giant pudgy?
Kind of want one. I think we will set a price target. Let's pull up our Pengu chart. Let's set a price target, and if we hit,
well, I like this. I like this.
If we hit a price, we're going to buy one or two Pengu plushies. What are we going to do, Brian?
I'm in. I'll buy one if the price all is right. Well, I'll buy one for sure.
I'll buy one too. So one for the kids with Brian, and then one for me.
My wife's gonna kill me when this thing shows up. But I'll have to show her what our Pengu bag looks like.
Penguins share this tab instead. And of course, I hit the wrong tab. I hit close tab. Sorry, juggling a lot here. It's hard to host, co-host, and do the production sometimes. But I try my best for the people. Let's go 1 year. Woof. All right, we're building a nice base here. We're building a nice base. Where
we found a floor.
Where's the Pengu plushie? Maybe should we do this live? Should we do this live on Friday as a little teaser? Maybe we think about it and we do it live.
All right, I like that. We're sitting right around a $400 million market cap.
Okay, so everybody listening on the back end of the show, Brian and I are going to be back on Friday at 1 p.m. Eastern. I believe it's going to be pushed. We should have a little bit more of a livelier chat. Hopefully we have good news and the markets are green and there's some peace and love in the world, because we all know that peace and love is much better than the alternative, and it feels like we need some. So I'm hoping for a fun Friday, and I think this could be a fun event. So if you're listening now, make sure you come. If you can't join us live, comment on Spotify or go on our Twitter. Let us know what price target you want Brian and I to buy a Pengu plush. And we will set that, and then we'll figure it out live together on Friday. Once we hit it, Brian and I will be buying a Pengu plush. So a fun little game here for the Crypto 101 podcast. Any final thoughts, Brian, as we wrap up today? We got Ozzy from Canada. I asked where Ozzy's from. Ozzy's from Canada. Our lovely neighbors from the north. We've got Liverpool across the pond. Another international show.
We're all over the globe, man. I see they're trying to, that economist is trying to get rid of international travel. He's taken away two of our biggest claims to fame here. Bitcoin. And then obviously when we go international together, we're going to be like celebrities. Because there's so many people that tune. We can't go anywhere. I mean, there's people all over the place.
At this point, I feel like we're going to start getting recognized in the street. We're the international men of mystery over here.
This guy's trying to take that away from us. So it's making me even more angry at that clip. But
that is our final thought. That is our final thought. I should have found who this guy was before we started. So it was Professor Steve Keen. So apparently Stephen Bartlett. Stephen Bartlett is the host of the Diary of a CEO. It's Steve Keen. So Steve Keen is famous for predicting the 2008 crash. He's a professor, the world's first rebel economist to predict the 2008 financial crisis years before it happened, based on his proprietary data software, Ravel, which I'm sure he wants you to subscribe to. He has spent over 30 years as an academic and is currently a visiting scholar at the University of Amsterdam. So Steve likes to party.
Find Steve at the coffee shop in Amsterdam. Where
is he in the city center campus or is he in the red light district campus? Let me know, Steve. But the professor, again, I okay. So you got to appreciate his perspective. And give him the respect that he deserves. That he did call, apparently, the 2008 crash. But I will say, they make movies about people who call crashes when they put their money where their mouth is. And we all know the famous Michael Burry movie, The Big Short. So again, I wonder, interesting to see if Steve Keen worked with those guys. Maybe they helped use the software. Not something I can research and find out immediately on the show. But again, just a little clarity of who that was saying that Bitcoin's going to zero. Maybe he did. I wonder if he did help those guys and they paid him out. He's a part of that team, or another huge missed opportunity.
I need more info. We need to get this guy on a debate podcast. You know, he's way smarter than I could ever dream. But I need to get him on a debate podcast because I need to know why he plucked out. You know, he's picking on international travel and Bitcoin. Out of all the things that eat energy, that's what he's going after. It just seems, it feels like FUD. With a capital F, and his claim to fame was about 20 years ago. So, you know, if it was 2 years ago, some big call or crash calls, maybe I'd be more receptive. I don't know. I'm a hater on this guy a little bit. You know, I don't like anybody challenging when it doesn't seem like it lines up with the actual facts. But we'll see. We'll see, Steve. We'll see how this happens. I like the camp I'm in.
Yeah, I'm trying to think. I put a quick Google in. Did Steve Keen make money on 2008 crisis call? Nothing came up off of a quick Google, but he did receive the Revere Award in 2010 for his foresight.
I mean, I'm not saying he's not a smart guy. He doesn't foresight. I wouldn't know. He's probably had some wrong picks out there as well.
Professor Steve, this is a deeper dive by, you have to preface which AI you're using now, Brian. I didn't know if you knew that. Now that we're international figures, you have to say which AI you're using. So this is Google's deeper AI, Google AI. Deeper dive here. Professor Steve Keen did not profit financially from a market bet on the 2008 crisis. Instead, he famously lost a high-profile wager. Steve,
it's unwinding.
I'm just prefacing which facts. AI I'm using, Brian. I'm just saying he famously, apparently not that famous, because we haven't heard about it, but according to Google, he famously lost a high-profile wager regarding its impact on the Australian housing market. While he correctly warned in 2005 that the rising private debt would trigger a global crash, his specific prediction that the Australian house prices would drop by 40% failed to materialize. The wager in November 2008, Keen bet Maguire Group strategist Rory Robertson that the housing price would plummet 40%. Prices instead reached new highs by late 2009, leading Keen to officially lose the bet. The penalty as the loser, Keen had... Okay, so it was a friendly wager. Keen had to complete a 224-kilometer trek from Canberra to the summit of, I'm not even going to pronounce that, some mountain in April 2010. Okay, so it was more of an academic bet, I guess. So, but I don't know. He could have rode the Big Short and made a lot of money with that bet, but he got his award. He's an academic. He got his academic award. Not trying to pile on to Steve Keen here, but 0 for 1 with the Big Short, 0 for 2, Bitcoin at a dollar. So I don't know. I guess place your bets.
I'm not trying to keep score here, but it sounds like he's down by two goals and he's in a little bit of trouble right now. That's not helping. If that's not helping his case with me. I mean, he's wearing it
but up. We'd love to have him on our show, Professor Steve Keen. Open invitation, healthy debate, friendly debate. We'd love to have him on because, again, he's obviously super accomplished in his field, and he's on the podcast Diary of a CEO, which is a huge show. So congrats to him on that appearance, and congrats on going viral. That's what it's all about in the content game. You poke and pull and push, and you got a little viral clip there, Steve. So, again, we'd love to have you on the show. That'll wrap us up for today. Brian took the over on the 30 minutes, almost a double. We're pushing up on an hour. That's what we do here. Brian and Tiva, the butteriest voices on the internet. Wick Ryder says, yee, Ninja Nation. Interesting. No, shout out
to that buttery comment. We were joking about earlier between the show. Never has my Pittsburgh accent so nasally been called buttery, but whoever wrote that, T TiVo shared that with me, and I was like, we kind of get hung up on the hate comments every once in a while, but this is one that put a smile on my face. Never in my life has someone said buttery.
I was going to lead off the show with it. I was going to lead off the show with it on Friday. I still might because it's Friday vibes, and we got to start positive. Yeah, we got to. But we'll end the show. Shout out Holy Whale. We'll see if he listens to the whole episode today. But we're going to start off with some positive vibes on Friday. But yeah, calling us butter voices. Unbelievable. We appreciate the love, especially after some harsh, harsh hate comments. But that's going to do it all for us today. Hey, we had a ton of different people stop in today. Really appreciate everybody joining the live. Thank you, as always, for listening to the audio. We really appreciate you guys. We're going to be back Friday live at 1 p.m. EST. We're going to cover some news. Hopefully, it's a good vibes Friday. But that's all for today, and we'll see you then. Bye-bye, everybody.